Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 305. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. This helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and Train Heroic is fantastic. Also want to mention our new app, Play Pro. If you haven't downloaded that app from the App Store yet, it's basically Netflix for strength coaches. So make sure to check that out. Tons and tons of great content. This week, joined by a former staff member, Claire. I know her as Claire Kaufman, but she's Claire Quibido now. But she's a strength and conditioning coach up at Ohio State and done some phenomenal things in her career. And it's been awesome just to see her grow from back when she was a GA at Tennessee to what she's become now as a leader in the profession. So Claire, great to have you on.
Coach, thank you so much. Very humbled to be on here.
Awesome. Well, Claire, go into just a quick rundown of the places that you've been, but most importantly, which stop along the way had the biggest impact on you?
Absolutely. I was actually having a conversation with a staff member today, and she asked me the exact same question. So, did my internship down in Tennessee, and knew I wanted to go to grad school, and so they didn't have an opening yet, so I went out to University of Hartford and worked with some phenomenal coaches there, Dave Hauser, Ryan Carr, and then went back to Tennessee, because when you're not done learning somewhere, you go back to work with those coaches and to continue to learn. After Tennessee, first full-time position at Temple University, and then I took an assistant position down at Southeastern Louisiana. And then eventually came director, and now, Heather called and said, "Do you want to be a Buckeye?" And I said, "Absolutely." So, I would have to say the biggest impact so far was my time at Tennessee, just the time that we were there, the changes that went on, and so much learning, not only X's and O's, but about athletic departments and staffs, and, just a wealth of knowledge that I was able to gain while I was there.
Yeah, it was an interesting time at Tennessee when we were there, because we had essentially men's and women's athletic department hadn't merged yet. And yep. And so I was the head of the men's department. Heather was in charge of the women's department, and we merged. And so we became one big happy family there and try to make, to work through that whole process. So it was fun and tons of mutual respect across the board. And we had
absolutely a good time going
As we went, but it was definitely a unique time to be a part of an organization, for sure.
Absolutely.
Claire, we always start the show off with the biggest mistake you've made in your coaching career and how you've learned from it. And I think it's so important that we talk about those things, because if you can sidestep a couple landmines along your journey, it's so much easier if you learn from people's experience. So What's that mistake and how you learn from it?
I would say just, taking a job to take a job, not following people. You take a job. Heather always says here, don't chase a logo, don't chase a paycheck. And the biggest saying here from Mr. Woody Hayes himself is, you win with people. So, you go to where the good people are.
Yeah, such a so important, and as you go through this profession for any length of time, that's one of those things that you'll hear consistently across the board with veteran strength coaches, is it's not about the logo, it's not about the place, it is all about the people. And when you're young, you don't want to hear that, you think it is those things, but if you can learn that, the earlier you learn that, the more satisfied you are in this volatile, crazy profession that we're in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it makes a big difference, and I think anyone that's been in a different situation can attest to it.
At Ohio State, I think you guys, how many total sports is there now?
36 sports.
36 sports. And then how many, yeah. So as you guys are working, this is the one thing I remember speaking at Ohio State when I was at Tennessee at a clinic there. And, you know, I'd never been there. It's the first time I'd ever been there. I went to the Horseshoe for the first time. And it was the one only place that, you know, you could look at and say, man, this is like, I mean, like if I would have been anywhere else besides Tennessee, I would have been like unbelievable.
Right.
But Tennessee kind of made it, you know, it's not the same, you know, same stuff. You guys are managing a big staff, just like we did at Tennessee. You got multiple facilities. You know, talk a little bit about the dynamics and how you guys have structured your department to better, you know, to provide a great service to the athletes.
Sure. So right now we're operating out of four main facilities. We just finished construction and insulation on the new facility, the Shoemaker Complex. So four major facilities. And then we're running 22 strong on strength coaches, not to mention about 15 interns right now. So it is a lot of people. It is a lot of management. But probably one of the – not probably. I think it's the best thing that we've done under the direction of Coach Mick and Heather is developing a very clear culture. And we even call it our culture playbook of just very distinct and clear – pieces of our culture and how we want to operate. And first and foremost, is always the student athlete first. Anything outside of that, I think what this culture playbook has done for us is in this world of collegiate athletics, there's so much gray. And having this culture playbook in front of us as a staff and operating under it, it allows more black and white for us. And I just think that can take it enhances clarity and it enhances transparency. We know what we can expect from each other, and the coaches and athletes, we're transparent in what they can expect from us.
So is this playbook, I mean, is that metaphorical or is there an actual written playbook that you guys have as part of a kind of an operations manual?
It is an actual written playbook. So kind of the three, you have your belief, you have your behavior, and you have your outcome. So for going off of belief, it's passion and energy, ownership and alignment. And then with each belief, there's a behavior. So with passion and energy, it's lead it through your action and your attitudes, and you're bringing it 24/7, whether it's 6 a.m. or 6 p.m., you're bringing that passion and energy. And passion and energy looks different for each coach. And then under ownership, it's, you know, be accountable for what you do and how well you do it. So we want to be the best of the best. And so that's the expectation. And then alignment is you're investing time and care for your student athletes. You're being real and you're all in, like I said, that 24/7 mentality. And then we have our outcome from each belief and each behavior. And it's first and foremost, maximizing the performance of our student athletes. And we want to be elite difference makers. Again, that can look different for different people. But to us, it's making an actual difference in our student athletes' lives. And the last piece of that alignment is that we want to build uncommon bonds. And we're able to build those uncommon bonds by the time and care that we're investing. So again, it's kind of a did you or didn't you when it comes to our culture and you know, how we operate for our student athletes.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, and I mean, Mick and Heather are great friends and you're a great friend. And I know the inner workings of how that's operated, but for those that don't, I mean, it's easy to have a manual. It's easy to have words on a wall, you know, but like living that every single day is where the accountability of that is really where the rubber meets the road. So Give some examples of how you guys have, you know, implemented that with your younger coaches or your staff, but then also how that's being held accountable on a daily basis.
You know, it always starts from the top down. You know, Coach Mick and Heather, they live and breathe this, and I obviously wouldn't be here unless I lived and could breathe it as well. So seeing it within those coaches that we have, and seeing how they operate in it. But then, you know, with supervisors in each facility holding our coaches giving them the why we want to operate this way, why it makes a difference, and being really transparent in what is expected, I think has helped a lot with living and breathing that culture. It was a very clear, we're not just going to show you how to coach or show you how to set up a room or anything like that, but, why do we do things this way and why will it benefit our student athletes? Because that's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, I think it's so important. Culture is the defining responsibility of a head strength coach, in my opinion. It's what you have to be most protective of, and you have to be most vigilant towards. And to me, that's creating an environment to where people either kind of sink or swim. Either they're going to rise to your intensity and rise to your standard, or they're just not going to fit into the point where they're going to want to leave themselves. And then it's a constant accountability with course correcting nonstop. And I think that's why Mickey, Heather, myself, we've had so many coaches go off and do such good things. Is if you did something wrong, you were going to hear about it that day. You were going to.
Yeah,
hear about
it's never kept it a secret.
It wasn't something that you waited till an evaluation and all of a sudden you got this laundry list. It was like you just didn't do it very long if you did it at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that that art of difficult conversations, that art of correcting without demeaning, is the something that has to be developed in strength and conditioning coaches if you want to be a leader. And I love that concept. With the department with 22 coaches, you've structured it in a little bit different way, right? With title, how there's advancement and those types of things. Talk a little bit about how you guys have structured things there.
Sure. Yeah. So, what you want to create, once you have your great people in place on the staff, it's all right. Now, how do you keep them? And why do people move jobs? They're looking to move up. So creating an ability for upward mobility within a staff. So right now, we obviously have Coach Marotti as our assistant athletic director for sports performance, and then Heather is our senior director. But then there's just two directors. So it's Coach Phil Matus and myself as directors. But we have four main facilities. So the goal would be to have four directors in each facility. And then, you could have your associate level coach and then your assistant strength coach and then your strength coach is kind of that entry level position. And entry level is defined differently in each place. For us, that an entry level position, that strength coach position, there is a little bit more experience within that position as well. So it's not, I wouldn't call it your typical entry level.
That's great. That upper mobility, that's such a great term or great phrase. Because I think, you have to provide some direction both for the department so that they can start to kind of frame things right when it comes to pay scale and respect and level and those types of things. But you also need to do it sort of that coaches feel like they haven't arrived yet, that they have to meet some certain criteria and objectives to be able to go on in this profession. And I think that goes back to just overall as strength and conditioning coaches, we need to continue to define what it means to be a professional strength and conditioning coach. It's still a profession that's still within its first 100 years. And so we haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, I think it's important that you're not just giving away titles to give away a title or, giving someone a pay raise. It's, you can see that actual upward movement for them. It's not just a cheap title or a glorified assistant. There's actual changes that you're making within your position. And then with that, the expectation is higher.
Great. So you've had a unique, you married into the profession as well, or married into athletics. And so I think your husband's a trainer, right? Or
in the sport. He is. Yep.
And so that's unique in that you guys, it's not like when you take a job, it's not just a unilateral decision. you know, and somebody's going to, you know, it's almost like it's a group package to some degree. How, you know, for those that have relationships that are in the profession, like how have you, like, how would you navigate that? Or what advice would you have for people?
Yeah, we talked about this a long time ago. So we met at Temple, and this is probably the worst thing in the world is falling for someone that's also in athletics because of the nature of the profession. But just setting really clear and simple goals for your relationship. You know, we knew that we both wanted to progress in our careers. But we also wanted to be together. So before we were married, it was, you know, how long can we live apart before it's, you know, really decision time. And then once we got married, we had decided, you know, we're neither of us are kind of ready to leave the profession. But it is, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. it is.
Not ready to leave the profession.
Yeah, not ready to leave the profession, but where, you know, how do you make the decision of if you have to get there, who you follow, and that's decided as a group, as you are together, and then just we always wanted to be the best candidate no matter what. So if he were to take a job somewhere, and a position to open up for a strength coach, that no matter what, I was going to be the best candidate, so that we're not doing a disservice to the university either. But that we are able to, be together. And we've been able to do that so far with being at now, you know, three different schools at the same school. You know, at Southeastern, he left Temple to go to Southeastern. So then I had gone there, an assistant position to open up, and sure, it was a pay cut, and sure, it might have been seen as a step down, but that wasn't part of our goal. Part of our goal was to be together, right, and to be in the field. So that accomplished that goal. So you're obviously, there might be some sacrifices made here or there, but the main point is, you know, what you want, what is your goal? And for us, that was just, you know, to be together in the same state and city.
Yeah. It's not as easy as it sounds. Even when you're not married into the profession or into athletics. But I think it's something that's fairly common in that, you know, I mean, you know, as much as we work, like if you're single, like where else are you supposed to meet people, right?
Right. Right.
So it's I get it. No, it's I think the thing to take away from what you just said for those that are listening is, I think you got to look at what you know. Again, go back to is money your motivation? Is your logo your motivation? Is, you know, what is ultimately what's going to make you happy and joyful? And then turn around and reverse engineer that and say, okay, how can we make this happen? And I think that's what you said by just saying, hey, look, the goal is for us to be together. That's the goal. And we're both doing what we love to do. And, you know, if you keep that as the motivation, then money and those types of things should really take care of themselves, you know, when it's all said and done. But that's awesome.
Right.
Claire, we end the show with some resources here. So give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I got to go with, you get what you emphasize and you get what you tolerate.
So, who gave you that?
I believe that's Coach Marotti right there.
What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
I'd say, you know, we never like to glorify busy, but I'd say my reading has been pretty low lately with the new job and 4-month-old at home. But the Tony Dungy Uncommon Daily Devotional, to me, that's something that kind of keeps me on track for reading. And app, again, time is the essence. So Cam Scanner, anytime, saves me a minute here or there by taking any document, turning it into a PDF and making it, you know, to be able to share through email or text is has been huge for me.
Awesome. Any websites?
we can get so caught up in our own world. And so anything that can kind of keep me connected, so athletic business, knowing on what's going on in college and in our field. And then the athletic director, I'll go on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is something that I've always been impressed with by you. And I think it's a testament to Heather and what she's, you know, what she's helped teach as well. But being eclectic and being not just inside the box of strength and conditioning and looking to influences like athletic director you and athletic business and understanding more of the big picture is something that, you know, I think strength coaches in general, we need to be doing. We all have this, like I said, where it's less than 100 years. So we all have an obligation to document, to progress, to grow the profession. And, you know, we do that by becoming better professionals ourselves and looking for inspiration outside of what's worked and replicate that within. So I just, you know, you've always been somebody that has had a great head on their shoulders and always, you know, worked hard first and foremost, soaked up every bit of knowledge from mentors along the way, and it's paid off in a big, big way, and you're doing some awesome things. So super proud of you, proud to know you, call your friend, and excited for you as you continue to go down this journey.
Well, Coach, thank you so much for what you do and having me on it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.